4 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer. Lukey. It is after hours here on The Fan as the Yankees finish up their sweep of the Royals. They head out west now to play the current Sacramento, former Oakland, future Vegas Athletics. And the Yankees, what a difference a week makes. They went into the weekend against Tampa Memorial Day weekend. If things got ugly, they could be significantly behind Tampa in the American League East. Fast forward here, the game on Sunday, Aaron Judge pops one over the fence there in right field, walk-off home run. They sweep the Royals. The Rays, who basically hadn't lost a game, it felt like, for a month, now they can't find their footing. They lost four straight. Yankees won four straight. They pick up four games, and now the Yanks are three back in the loss column. The Mets, they snapped their losing streak, winning the final game. It wasn't necessarily easy in the ninth inning. The ball wasn't even put in play, but ultimately Devin Williams was able to close that out. We'll get into the Mets, you know, big picture coming up in terms of Mendoza, in terms of Cohen, in terms of Stearns, but you've heard me say it. You're going to continue to hear me say it. Chip away, chip away, chip away. Until you get to that 7, 8, 9 game winning streak. Which I know for a lot of you out there, you're like, oh, they're not going to win 7, 8, 9 games. Teams win 7 and 8 games in a row. Baseball is a long year. You can have an 8-game losing streak. You can have an 8-game winning streak. And if they can get that offense going and get their footing and go on that streak, all of a sudden, much like where the Yankees are at right now, and it's different in that they've played better, obviously, throughout the year, but same type of thing applies where it was looking a little dicey there as far as the division, and all of a sudden, Rays go on a losing streak, Yankees go on a winning streak, and things can flip in 7 days. Much like it is with the Mets. And they started off May really strong, and they have an opportunity to finish May on a strong note if they can take care of business against the Marlins. And really, they should, in the sense that Miami just takes great pleasure in sticking it to the Mets and just kind of rubbing their face in it. Now it's the Mets' turn to return that favor. That's for sure, especially coming off a series sweep over the weekend in Miami at the hands of the Marlins. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call, and we await an opponent for the Knicks. Game 6 in San Antonio, that is coming up later on this evening. If OKC takes care of business, I think Spurs win, but if OKC takes care of business, it will be Knicks, it will be Thunder, it will be Game 1 Wednesday night in OKC. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. And obviously, once we know the opponent, we've talked about it, but once we know the opponent, then we can really do the deep dive of the series, the matchups, what to look for, all that stuff. Let's go out to Ryan in Connecticut here on After Hours. What's going on, Ryan?
Yo, what's up, Tommy, man? Hey. That was fun to listen to you and JJ chat it up. What I want to say is if you think the Spurs are headed in against the Knicks, do you think there's a chance that they'd start Mitch Robinson against them up?
I could see that, but I would say probably not. But Mitchell Robinson would be a big part of containing Wemby, that's for sure. That would be a big body that you could throw at Wemby. And one of the reasons why I like the Knicks in that series a lot is because of the idea that the Knicks have the type of physicality and size that can give Wemby problems.
Yeah, I get that. I'd probably go with the same 5 starters that we've been going with throughout the
playoffs. When you're on this type of run, even though it might help you a little bit better matchup-wise, you don't want to mess with a good thing. You're on a roll. You have 11 straight victories. Now, if you lose game one and Wembanyama goes for like 40 and 22, then you can make that adjustment. That's what the playoffs are all about, adjusting, especially off of losses. And Mike Brown has done a good job of that. But I would, for game one, if it does end up being the Spurs, I would go with the same, you know, starting lineup that they've had all playoff long.
Yeah, and I want to kind of connect the magic of, like, the 99 Knicks and the whole, like, 2000. We had the Giants and then, you know, the whole Mets. And, you know, they didn't come all the way through. But, you know, trying to capture that with the Mets tonight, you kind of even saw Devin Williams getting frustrated with himself out there at the end, towards the end, you know, and it was great that he ended up pulling through. I think I heard one of the shows earlier today talking about already trying to think about selling stuff off, you know, for the Mets, and I don't think we're there yet. We had a strong beginning for May, and you know, like you're saying, we always kind of play Miami and Cincinnati kind of crummy, at least the past couple of years. But I hope they don't blow it up, because I know we had that magical season in 2024.
They were 11 games under 500 before they took off. They went into tonight 11 games under 500. If you want to draw a parallel to those seasons, and obviously they're different years, you know, each year is unique, but it just goes to show you that you could be at this point in the year and be 11 under 500 and you can get to the NLCS. Now, you certainly don't want to draw it up that way. I understand that, but it speaks to the point that they are not completely out of it. They should not be selling, and I don't think they're looking to sell. I think if anything, they would be looking to buy, especially if they can go on a type of winning streak, get close to 500, and start to see kind of the light out of the tunnel.
Yeah, I think we're past that. Like, we made our mistakes with the Verlander and everything, and yeah, I mean, all I could say is, you know, they were in control for most of the game, even though I think Cincinnati stranded like over 15 people.
Yeah, they stranded like at least 15, maybe even 18 when it was all said and done. But yeah, Cincinnati was not able to get the big hit, so you credit the Mets pitching for bending and not breaking. And listen, Jonah Tong, who was a guy last year that he wasn't ready. I mean, that goes without saying. He was just not ready for this moment. They rushed him up here, obviously out of necessity. But so far, in the couple times we've seen him this year, he looks more the part, and one of the big reasons why he is the number two prospect, or was the number two prospect, in their farm system.
Yeah, always a pleasure chatting with you, Tommy. Yep. Man, I hope you have a good rest of your night, man. Let's go Knicks. Let's go Mets.
Yep, and I look at this Mets season as... number one, I'm not giving up on it. And number two, you can look at players like Bench. You could look at players like, of course, Soto, obviously in a different category, and Lindor when he's healthy and once he comes back. But I look at Bench, I look at Ewing, I look at McLean, I look at Scott, I look at Tong. I see more of that coming down the line as well. And that's something to get really excited about. So I think there could be, even in a year where there hasn't been a lot of goodwill and the majority of the fan base is frustrated, although it's always amazing to me, when I turn on a Met game and you see the crowd, everybody seems enthusiastic, they seem positive, they seem excited. You know, they'll boo and get upset when things aren't going well, but overall, they're there, they're going through the turnstile. They wouldn't if they didn't have some type of hope for the team. And then you go on social media, which is not the greatest, you know, temperature check of anything. But you go on there and you'd think, okay, it's all LOL Mets. And even sometimes with the callers, not across the board, but you just would think, oh man, there's just a lot of negativity surrounding this team. So it just goes to show you, though, that there's always multiple sides of the coin here. And I think there are still Met fans that are optimistic, not only about the current state of the team in terms of them turning around this season, but also the future. And that's one of the things I brought up last night in terms of David Stearns. I know there's people that want him out. He's not going to be out. He's not going to get fired. Not today, not tomorrow, not next month, not in the offseason. Steve Cohen, much like James Dolan with Leon Rose, he hired this man to turn the Mets into a winner year in and year out. Milwaukee is not only a team that wins 90-plus games a year, or certainly in the high 80s, they win the NL Central essentially year in and year out. Even this year when everybody was kind of, oh, the Cubs, oh, this team, oh, that team, the Pirates are better. Look at what the Brewers are doing. And that was built by Stearns. That is what Steve Cohen is looking for with his baseball team. And Steve went the route early on of, and you brought it up in that call, Verlander, Scherzer, we're going to just throw our money around and money this, money that. I have a big checkbook and I'm going to show it off. And now when everybody wants to talk about the payroll, a lot of that payroll, and Stearns is, you know, some of that is Montas and things of that nature, but a lot of that payroll is not even on the team anymore. So the vision of David Stearns and with this farm system, it is still developing through this year. And I think he will look at some things like a Polanco, who is now on a rehab assignment, so he should be up here sooner rather than later. But he might look at a player like that in the future and say, you know what, injury history, I'll stay away. I'll err on the side of caution on that. Even though he was coming off a big year with a ton of clutch hits against the Mariners, hard to argue the season he had as far as the Mets not being interested. He had a great year for Seattle. He was clutch, two home runs off Skubal in October. Big hit after big hit for Seattle, which is what this team was missing last year, which is why they brought in the players they did. They wanted to change that culture, that DNA of the team. And that's still something that they search for and are trying to build. With the infusion of the younger players mixed in with star players and also veteran players. This is a painting that is being painted. And I know a lot of people, and by the way, I had high expectations going into the year. I still keep those high expectations. But I know a lot of people, because they were upset with the offseason, they look at that painting and it's not completed and go, ah, just scrap it. Get rid of the painter, get rid of the painting, get rid of everybody. It doesn't work. That's not how franchises that are functioning at a high rate or a not dysfunctional franchise, that's not the way they operate. Stearns was hired to do a job. I believe Steve Cohen is going to stick by his side. Now, could they bring in someone to work with Stearns, more of a GM role? I could see that, absolutely. I've thrown out a name like Carlos Beltran. There are certainly candidates out there that would be strong ones that could fit that bill. That could work, you want to call it under David, I would call it with David Stearns. I think Steve Cohen would be open to that. I don't think it's a situation like what we heard with Aaron Glenn, you know, allegedly or reportedly, where he went to Woody Johnson and said, hey, I'd like to hire Wink Martindale as my defensive coordinator. And Woody basically told him, hold on a second, I'm paying you all this money. You're a defensive guy. You be the defensive coordinator, essentially. And that's why they hired Brian Duker, who I think is AI. I've never heard of the guy in my life. Brian Duker? And we know the Jets love to, I think they use analytics more than any team in football. So it wouldn't stun me if the guy that is the defensive coordinator is Brian Duker AI. He's Grok, essentially. And that would play into the fact that Aaron Glenn is essentially the defensive coordinator. I don't think that's what's going on here with the Mets. I think Steve Cohen would be open to that. Because above all, Steve Cohen wants this team to win year in and year out. That's why he hired Stearns. And that's why I think he's going to stick with him. Because even if it's a rocky road, and look, they made the NLCS in 2024. I know last year didn't go the way that we all wanted it to, especially down the stretch, and I understand they missed October, and that is something that you don't want to accept, and I certainly don't want to accept. You want to see them win year in and year out, and this year, so far in the first couple months, they have not put themselves in a position to make October, but I still think the organization is moving in the right direction. And the seeds of winning year in and year out are there. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call if you want to join the conversation. Knicks, Yankees, Mets, whatever's on your mind. Let's go to Alan on Long Island. Alan, what's going on?
Lugermeister!
What's happening?
Lugi, I want you to buy all of Pat Buchanan's books, every one of them, and read them.
I'm not going to do that.
Don't
read books. Not a book reader. I haven't read a book since high school.
We'll get it on audio. They have them on audio.
Audiobook's a little bit different because, that I can listen to it. But you know what, though? I just even listening to a book, I'm really not there. I appreciate the sort of the recommendation, but I'm going to have to pass on that one.
And the Lugie JJ was Nixon Frostonia. That was excellent.
Thank you.
That really, really is good. And you know what? It's a well-kept secret, but when you start talking about the game and getting to the ins and outs, you know your stuff. You know, I mean, there's a lot of entertainment involved.
Well, is that in question? I didn't realize that. Is that sort of the thing? Is that sort of people don't think I know what I'm talking about sometimes? Yes, I do like to bring the entertainment value into it and kind of maybe sometimes talk around sports, so to speak. But if I have to roll the sleeves up and talk sports, I certainly can. Hopefully that's not a narrative out there. If it is, and hopefully you hear things like this and that kind of cuts through that narrative. You know, Alan?
Yeah, well, you're right. Listen, if you have critics, that means people know who you are. Don't worry
about it. I think Robert Sala said, if you don't have haters, you ain't popping. Although Robert Sala then got fired a couple years later. But he got rehired, that's for sure, as a head coach. So that there's, you know, obviously some validity to the fact that, hey, if you got some haters, it means you're cutting through. So all good. But I appreciate the kind words, that's for sure.
Because, you brought up Sala. Sala and Bonehead. You got to put them in the driver's seat for Arch Manning with those two clowns. I was hoping the Jets would keep Fields, Mr. Fields, where him and Glenn they would have been in the driver's
seat. Well, Geno Smith is not going to be good. I feel confident in saying that. So I understand Fields can't throw the football, but Geno Smith at this rate, I don't think is a starting quarterback in the NFL. The Jets are going to start him, and I think that will be advantageous to the ultimate goal. Now, it might mean Aaron Glenn loses his job, but as a Jet fan, you care more about getting your quarterback than the head coach at this point, especially a head coach that hasn't proven himself on any level that he is even a competent head coach. It's all about getting the quarterback, and then the Jets could be really where the Knicks are right now, which is on the doorstep of a championship.
Right, and Fields can't throw, and listen, the other guy throws the ball, but he throws it to the defense. Yep. And there's a lot of interceptions. So that, listen, maybe they'll be in the running for Arch. That's the only thing the Jet fans can hope for. Don't fall for this nonsense. We're going to win 5-6 games. That's all.
No, that's purgatory. And listen, whether it's Arch, who I like a lot, but it's a really deep quarterback class. And the Jets, if they're picking right at the top of the draft, which is where they need to be, they will be in a very good spot because then they can draft the guy that they want. It might be Moore, it might be somebody else, but Arch Manning will certainly, I think he will be the first quarterback taken in this draft. I really do. He played a lot better in the second half at Texas, and I think he'll have an even better year here with Sark and Austin. So I expect Arch to be, and plus the pedigree, the last name, all of that. He will be the number one quarterback taken off the board. If the Jets understand the mission, they will be sitting there, and they'll be sitting pretty if they have an opportunity to take the first quarterback off the board.
That's right. And the thing with listen, any Met fans, if you're driving right now, just lower the volume. I don't want you to hear this. But Pete Alonso is on pace knocking 100 runs.
That's not a surprise, though. But I don't think you have to lower the radio. Pete Alonso, if he has a big year or a big career with Baltimore, that's not going to surprise a Met fan. It's not. You know? And there's also other things about Pete's game, and I've seen some clips online here where the other day he left like a pop up drop or something like that. It was odd, and his average is not great, his OPS is not great. The power numbers are going to be there. You know, that's Pete's game for sure. But if Baltimore doesn't perform at the level that they expect, and Pete doesn't hit for a high average, I would imagine there will be Oriole fans that will be upset with Pete Alonso. So look, it's going to be one of those things, Alan, where the Nimmo stuff, the McNeil stuff, the Pete Alonso stuff, it's going to be decided whether or not that was a good move years down the line, not months down the line. So that the jury is still out on the decisions of David Stearns in terms of those three players in the offseason.
Well, we know Pete has a steel glove and a rubber arm, but listen, they got the DH position too waiting for him. Also, the Cavs. I mean, we know it's Mr. Sharman and Mr. Softy with those two guys, but
yeah, Mitchell and
when
Martin.
They had game one. The Knicks, you know, had a few days off there, a lot of day, over a week or whatever
it was. They were rusty, for sure.
Yeah, they should have, when they had the 22-point lead, the Cavs, they should have sent Harden to a speakeasy or to like a Wild West saloon. As soon as they just get him off the court.
Yeah, or a strip club or something. Yeah, no, that you're making a joke of it, but you're right. I mean, he was an absolute net negative for them. They tried to go one-on-one with him, not only offensively, but defensively with Jalen Brunson. I mean, James Harden, at any stage of his career, certainly at the latter stage of his career, he is not a strong defensive player. Jalen Brunson ate him for lunch, and whether it was Kenny Atkinson's decision or just James Harden existing on the team, the Cavs blew that game, and it created a situation where the Knicks then had an opportunity to sweep them, and the Knicks did that. If the Cavs had won that game, maybe it would have went 6. I still think it would have went 5, but it certainly wouldn't have been, obviously, a sweep, and it would have made the Knicks have to sweat a little bit, because then you're going, oh boy, is this a replay of last year when they lost game one at home in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, well, Kenny Atkinson shouldn't even be coaching a high school team.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get fired. And John and I were talking about this, JJ, and he was like, well, who are you going to hire? I don't care who you're going to hire. I mean, Kenny Atkinson, the way he coached in that series and then the stuff he said about analytics, he embarrassed himself on both ends there in terms of on the court and then into the microphone. I don't know how you justify bringing him back. The team is soft, that's for sure. Mitchell's soft, Harden's soft, the bigs are soft, Mobley, Allen, they're gutless, but at the same time, their head coach didn't do him any favors in that series.
Right, and let's face it, the Knicks, this is what we got to think about right now. Get healthy, get rested, but be prepared and get ready to play. You cannot be falling back on your game conditioning. It's up to the team now, and up to the coaches to make sure these guys are ready for game one.
Especially the physicality they're going to see. They're going to the deep end of the pool, especially if it's OKC. They're going to be playing the defending champs. They're going to be playing a team with a lot of intestinal fortitude, very deep team, very physical, defensive-oriented. So the Knicks are going to have to be ready, and I wonder out loud if they've kind of been lulled into a, hey, these it's been so easy, so when they do get tested, I want to find out how they respond to that.
Well, they know how good Oklahoma is. And that's the thing is with Oklahoma, they have to get healthy. They've got to finish it up in game six. But the thing now is I just remembered something. Like you say, you don't like reading books or anything.
No, I don't.
Would you be willing to go to the internet and go back to a 1992 interview on CBS news program on Sunday morning with Pat Buchanan and Bob Schaefer? You got to go there.
No, hold on now. Now you got me doing this now on YouTube and stuff like this. The Knicks are in the finals. You got me doing interviews with looking up interviews with Pat Buchanan. I'll say this. Maybe in July and August when it's a little bit slower, or February, we could maybe go down a rabbit hole. You know who you should call up there? Evan. He loves going down these rabbit holes. My focus is on the Knicks and the Mets and the Giants right now. I can't be focused on Pat Buchanan. My focus has to be on sports and the job right now, Alan. But I appreciate, once again, the rec. But I do like YouTube, for sure. I like listening more than I like reading. But I'm gonna have to pass on that one as well.
All right, you can do that. But maybe, sometime in the summertime, or maybe a rainy morning or something.
Doubt it, but maybe. I doubt that, though. I doubt it. Like, there would have to be, I could think of a million things I'd rather be doing. I'd even put like brushing my teeth away. I don't have any interest in it. I still got to catch up on this season of Euphoria, and my girl Sydney Sweeney is just making a lot of headlines. And look, I know that going in that she, because I've seen the series, so I know what she brings to the table in the show. But apparently, it's been even on another level. But I am not somebody. Once in a while, I'll do this. But you name any great series through the years, and all my favorite TV shows, whether it's Seinfeld, whether it's Sopranos, whether it's Entourage, whether it's Game of Thrones, whether it's The Wire, I'm not big on the, I'll watch the episode and then wait the next week to watch the other episode. And now we live in a world where there's spoilers and there's social media, so it's tough. Like, my wife spoiled one of the things that happened in Avengers Endgame. I yelled and screamed at her. I'm like, she goes, well, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? I want to go see the movie. That's the big deal. Now, she didn't give away, there's two big things in that movie. I guess it's been like 6 years. Can I talk about this at this point? See, even me, I don't like to spoil stuff. If you are the one person walking the planet that has not seen the Avengers Endgame, I've seen it like 50 times already, but if you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it for you. But and even me telling you there's two things, that might be a spoil. There's really 50 things, but there's two big ones that if I were to say this happens, you'd be like, I wish you didn't say that. Well, she said one of them, because I guess someone at work told her. And I was like, okay, you didn't mean anything. It was innocent. But I'm not going to the movies with you anymore. Like, I'm done, because you're spoiling the movie. I'm not a bitch. And she likes to, like, we'll watch a movie together, and she goes, what do you think's going to happen? What do you think's going to happen here? I'm like, shut up. You shouldn't tell your wife to shut up, but I'm like, can you pipe down over there? I'd like to enjoy the movie. I'm not a person, when I was a little kid, I would shake the Christmas presents that were under the tree. Christmas morning, I want to open the present. I don't want to shake it and guess what it is. Will Andy pick me? Don't count on it. Who invited that kid? I want to make sure if I get my Buzz Lightyear or a PlayStation 2, but I want to find out. And when I'm watching a movie, I want to kind of weave through the movie itself. Speaking of, and we'll get back to your calls here in just 1 second. I was discussing this with my wife the other day, and I forgot why. I forgot if there was a movie or something like that. But I've been to movie theaters like twice in the last 6 years, and I used to go all the time. Like, I was a big movie goer. And the movie I saw right before COVID hit, it was maybe late winter or late 2019, early 2020, but it was the final movie in the Skywalker saga, The Rise of Skywalker. So the final one of the Disney, sort of the sequels to the original three, and then obviously have the prequels, but The Rise of Skywalker, I saw that in theaters. And then obviously COVID hit, so you couldn't go to the movies. And then after that, it was like, nothing really gets me to want to go to the movie theater. Like, it's got to be something so epic. Like, it's got to be something like, I have to go see this in the theater. But that movie hasn't existed for me in years. I went to go see The Iron Claw, which is obviously about the Von Erichs, which is a very famous wrestling family, a lot of tragedy, a lot of wrestling with Zac Efron. And it was really good. I don't know if that fits the bill of I got to get to the theater, but for some reason I was feeling like I wanted to go to the movies that day and I went to go see it. But outside of those two movies in the last 6 years, I have not gone to the movie theater at all. And maybe the Avengers one that's coming out at the end of the year, that might get me there. I want to say there was another one that kind of piqued my interest. Were they doing a Lord of the Rings or something like that? I want to say they are, but it needs to be something like that that's going to get me there. I'm not going for a rom-com, that's for sure. 888-808, and my wife will not go see scary movies at all. Not even Scary Movie, the comedy. I used to love horror movies, still do, but I don't watch them anymore because she refuses to watch them. And I don't want to watch them by myself. The whole fun of watching a horror movie, I think, or at least I did used to think this, is watching it with somebody because of the screams and the thrills and all that stuff. 888-808-1019, that is the phone number to call. We have a lot here on the docket. I'll get into Steve Cohen. I will get into whether or not he should meet the media or throw something out there on social media in terms of Twitter, whatever, X, and kind of give everybody a mission statement, kind of where the state of the franchise. Also, we'll talk about Carlos Mendoza. We will talk about the Yankees, the Knicks, as they get ready for the NBA Finals. A little bit of a layoff here, but plenty of time to talk about them as we are still basking in the glory of this 11-game winning streak. So the phone number to join the conversation is 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night, After Hours here on The Fan. 2:35 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. We are slowly ticking away to Game 6. That will be in San Antonio of the Western Conference Finals. OKC is up 3-2. Obviously, it was not a good look for the Spurs. Not just their performance in Game 5, but then Wemby, who stunk. He had a very soft 20 points. Skipped the podium after the game, which you know I'm not a fan of, whether it's an athlete or it's a sports radio host. And I'm not saying that, you know, we're not all guilty of it at times, but you should be held at least accountable for the skipping of the podium. And that's what Wemby did after a very poor performance, not only by him individually, but also in the game by his Spurs. That being said, I still think San Antonio has a punch left in them. I still think they're going to extend this series to a Game 7. Now, Game 7 in OKC, especially if they get their full allotment of players back, that is going to be a very, very tall order for the Spurs, a very large mountain to climb for them. I don't think they will do that, but I'm certainly rooting for it because I think the Knicks will beat the Spurs in 5 games. When you consider San Antonio has to fight back down 3-2, they have to win a Game 7 in Oklahoma City to knock off the defending champs. Back-to-back losses for the Thunder, which they never lose back-to-back games. So for San Antonio, for Wemby, for Castle, for all those, as Harper, Fox, to have that type of achievement, especially where their core players are all under, you know, 23 years old, I think they will have a major letdown. They're learning on the go. They're a year or maybe two ahead of schedule. They are going to dominate the NBA once they figure it out, and they're pretty close to figuring it out, but not yet. They're too young. Plus the hangover of knocking off the defending champs, especially battling back and winning the series down 3-2 and a Game 7 in Oklahoma City. I think they will be ready made to order for the Knicks, and they will steamroll them. San Antonio won't know what hit them, and it will be over quite quickly. So I am 100% rooting for the Spurs, plus their youth. I think the bright lights of the finals will be too much for them. They will win a championship, that group, maybe even championships, but not yet. They're a little bit ahead of schedule. They are not ready to be champions of the league quite yet. I don't think they have the necessary depth to win it all as well. I think the Knicks would have a major advantage in that department. Mitchell Robinson, his defense on Wemby will be a huge plus for the Knicks. So San Antonio is a great matchup for the Knicks. Not only personnel-wise, but because of what San Antonio is going to have to do to get to the Knicks and get to the finals. Like OKC, if this goes 7, and OKC wins even if it's a close Game 7 at home, they are a championship roster with championship DNA with the reigning back-to-back MVP. They are a well-oiled machine, well-coached. They play great defense. They play great team basketball, especially at home. And they know how to put one series behind them. As tough as it is, Game 7, they knock off the Spurs, a young, talented team like this. The Thunder will not lose their focus once the Knicks come into town. They will be primed. They will be ready. Their fans will be ready. And they will not, in my opinion, skip a beat. And the Knicks, coming off of an 11-game winning streak with a long layoff, and we saw what happened in Game 1 against Cleveland, where they were down 22 points at home and were able to storm back, due in large part to not just the contributions of Brunson, but Shamet, Bridges, OG. Terrific stuff. But the Cavs also played a part in it as well. Miserable lack of coaching in terms of not calling a timeout, not taking James Harden off the court, certainly not putting him on Jalen Brunson. Donovan Mitchell being non-existent down the stretch. The Cavs treated that like a scrimmage. As great as the Knicks are, I am confident in saying that if they're down 22 points in Oklahoma City with about 7 minutes to go, they're not coming back in that game. So if they're rusty, if they play bad basketball in game one and they're down big, they're going to lose game one. I want to see how they respond. Because when you're riding this momentum, I think it's a big part of it. They know now, even if they went into this game going, how many in a row is it? They're sitting here for 8-9 days, a lot of rat poison. They're going to be hearing about all these wins in a row. It's impossible to ignore at this point. You are now sort of outside of that focus because you're not playing games. You're not traveling. You're just practicing. Even though those practices, I'm sure, will be intense and they're going to try to keep their focus as much as humanly possible, you could drift a little bit. I know Brunson has said he's staying off social media. I can't speak to the other guys on that roster, but they're aware of what they're doing and the history that they're making. So you're riding that momentum. You're riding this just wave of great basketball on both ends of the floor. But you haven't been tested. It hasn't been made to be uncomfortable for you. Whether it's the Spurs, whether it's the Thunder, they're going to make it uncomfortable. They're going to make it physical. They are going to bring a lot of defensive intensity of the likes that the Knicks have not seen. A little bit with Atlanta, but certainly not against Philly, who just rolled out the red carpet for them, and the same thing with the Cavs. And the Knicks, to their credit, took advantage of it. Yes, it was an easy road, but you know what? The Knicks dominated that easy road. Dominated it with historical beatdowns in these clinchers where they snatched the soul of teams and cities. They rendered Philly a non-sports town. They completely and utterly embarrassed Cleveland. Now you get the defending champs. And if you don't get them, you get a team in San Antonio who, yes, I think the Knicks will handle, but still you're talking about an extremely talented team that is going to play more physical defense than anything you've seen so far. And if the Knicks are rusty again in game one and they do lose, now we're going to find out exactly what the mindset is. Because when you are on a heater, when you are pressing your bets, whether it's you're gambling or you're just, you know, maybe you're bowling and it's strike after strike after strike after strike. Or you're a pitcher and you're like, you know, Sanchez on Philly and you have all these scoreless innings. When that breaks, when that's or a winning streak in the NFL, baseball, when you lose a game, how do you respond to that? Because all of a sudden it's, okay, we're not Superman anymore. There's some kryptonite. We lost the game. And depending on how you lose it, could also impact the mindset and the psyche of the team. Because right now, they couldn't be any more euphoric. This is the most thrilling, one-sided, dominating basketball that this franchise has ever put forth on the court. It's the likes of we have never seen before and probably will never see ever again. the Knicks are running downhill. Downhill, down, they're doing damage. Downhill, 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 downhill. The fight is not being taken to them. Whoever they see in the finals will bring the fight, especially the Thunder. When the Knicks lose a game, how do they respond? Because now the streak is over. The steamrolling, boat racing, belt to ass streak is over. And now they got to roll their sleeves up and go to work. And get game two, or whatever game they lose, get that next game. And now, because they haven't had a series since Atlanta. They swept both teams. No series, no sweat, easy peasy, no biggie, just smooth sailing, including game one against the Cavs, because there was no resistance when they were coming back from 22 points. There was none. The Cavs basically left the floor and said, all right, have your moment here that we'll never forget as New York sports fans, as Knicks fans. There was no resistance. Nobody made it tough on you. Now it will be. Now, this team has a ton of resolve. They have a ton of experience. They've been through the sports wars together, so they have a lot of toughness. They have a lot of heart, led by Jalen Brunson, who is all heart. And they have a lot of guys that you trust in these moments. But this is where a Bridges and a Karl Anthony Towns, who are playing their best basketball of their careers, certainly their Knick careers, those guys are going to get tested in this series on both ends of the floor. Brunson, we know, is not a great defensive player, so he has to be hidden. SGA, who is a foul merchant, he's a flopper, but he is going to get to the line, and he's going to give you problems as far as your guys in foul trouble. That's something that Mike Brown and these players are going to have to figure out to minimize it as much as humanly possible. Because the Knicks certainly have depth, but the last thing they want to do is have key players in foul trouble, which is exactly what the Thunder and SGA want, is to get you in foul trouble. He wants to get to the line. He wants to see the ball go through the net. And that's when you get 30-plus points from him on a nightly basis. And the Thunder also have pain in the necks. We've talked about it with Ihart, Caruso. They just have guys that are thorns in your side. Pros. And that's going to be on the Knicks to get in the ring with them and take their best punches, get knocked down, and get back up, and then go to work. Because they have not been knocked down in a month. They have not. And you'd certainly like to see in Game 1 a much better performance than you saw in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's for sure. Because if they do perform that way in OKC or San Antonio, they're going to lose. They're not battling back from 22 down. That would be stunning. Not because the Knicks aren't playing great basketball, but because of the opponent that they're playing, which is a much better team than what they saw in the Cavs, a team with heart and a team with defense. You know, you're not coming back from 22 down if a team locks you up on D. You're just not. But the Cavs didn't. They had James Harden out there on ice skates. And it was absolutely pitch and catch, so to speak, for Brunson in game one. That won't be the case against these physical guards and the big bodies that the Thunder and the Spurs can throw at him. So, and it's tough because how do you not avoid the rust in game one? I don't know. You can't recreate in practice what you're going to see in terms of environment, in terms of the players, in terms of the defense, in terms of just also the pressure and the lights and everything. This is the finals now. This is as big a stage as you will see. The NBA finals, the first time in 27 years, and that'll be a talking point for the next week. 27 years, 27 years, 27 years. So all the pressure that they have felt, it doesn't even compare to what they're going to feel going into this series. They'll be able to handle it, but it's going to be a lot of pressure. A lot. And the lights will be even brighter. and you don't want them to fall into some of the bad habits that we have seen at their low moments this series, whether it's Brunson dribbling the ball too much down the stretch. This team, and this is why they've been successful in these 11 games, is because it's team basketball. When the Knicks get into trouble, I think Jalen gets it to his head where he's like, I got to carry this team. I don't necessarily maybe trust the other players at this point, so I got to do it all myself. And that might work for a game, but it's not going to work for a series. So if it's dribbling around, if it's iso ball, if it's everybody staring at him, if that's the case and the Thunder make it that way, the Knicks are going to be in trouble. They can't fall into that. They have to continue the brand of basketball they're playing. Don't expect them to win by 40, but I do expect to see the ball movement. I do expect to see Karl Anthony Towns, kind of everything being run through him. I expect Mikal Bridges to continue the streak that he is on and be that offensive threat that he has been for pretty much throughout, ever since game 3 against Atlanta. You know, where now you're seeing 18 points a night, which is the Mikal Bridges that Leon Rose thought he was getting. It was the Mikal Bridges that we all thought we were getting from the Nets, not only the great defensive player, but offensively, the two-way player, to go along with another two-way player in OG Anunoby, which would really solidify this starting five, as good a starting five as there is in the league. But when that starting five is not a five-man game, if it's just a one-man game, they'll fall. So they cannot have that type of situation develop in this series. Because I'm sure, especially OKC, who has the experience, I'm sure that's what they're going to try to turn this into. Let Brunson dribble around a lot, and he'll get his, but the team will lose all the offensive flow that they have had. This is a connected, well-oiled machine right now, playing at a level that is better than anyone right now. Better than the Thunder, better than the Spurs. But it is paramount to keep that continuity going. It is paramount to keep this wave and this momentum going as long as humanly possible. Winning that first game would be just, that would set up the Knicks in the driver's seat, because they would keep the streak going. They would steal game one. It's a house money situation going into game two. Thunder are backs against the wall, which they're no strangers to, and they certainly know how to respond to it. They never lose back-to-back games, or certainly haven't in a very long time, especially one of them being now at home, or both of them being at home. But that's all you're looking for, one game. And ideally game one, because that keeps kind of that good flow going, and then going into game two, you're like, all right, we could get this one, great, but you know what? It's all good. I think the psyche would still be strong heading back home, especially with the big-time performance in game one. That's what they need, though. And they can't look as rusty as they did against the Cavs, because they'll pay a steep price for it. Cleveland didn't make them pay. Cleveland did not make them pay. But the Thunder will. The Fan Focus is presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. You know, I want to talk about Jonah Tong here for a second, because he's a guy that, and it's not his fault. He was thrusted into a situation last year that was really tough. And he wasn't alone. McLean, Sproat, all three of them. They were brought up too late. They should have been brought up earlier. They were brought up as the saviors. You got to save the season. We can't pitch. You got to save the season, which is an incredibly difficult spot to put a young pitcher in, especially if he's not ready. McLean was. Sproat sort of was. Jonah Tong was not. You could just see it in his body language and obviously based on his production. But when you see the man pitch and you see his stuff, you understand why he is so widely considered one of the best prospects in the Mets farm system. As a matter of fact, the number two prospect. You see the stuff. You want to draw comparisons to guys like Tim Lincecum or whomever. But he obviously wasn't ready last year. I don't think he was mature enough. I don't think it just wasn't his time. Now, and long way to go, but in the small sample size we've seen him this year, he looks like a totally different guy. And he's channeling, and you saw it last night, the emotion in a better way, where it's not bad body language, it's actually really good body language. And that's extremely promising for not only him, but but for this team. And that's sort of the vision here of these young aces leading this staff for years to come. And to me, the development of not only Tong, but Ewing and Benj, who had a got rid of the mustache, got a couple of hits last night. McLean, of course. Those are big subplots to the overall season. The development and the ascension of these young players that you're banking on to be a huge part of the foundation of this franchise for years to come. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. You want to talk Knicks, you want to talk Mets, you want to talk Yankees. It's all on the table for the next couple hours here on The Fan. It is after hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is Lugie in the late night here on The Fan.